Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
We're brothers, we're happy and we're singing and we're colored. Give me a high five!
Women who are trauma exposed seem to have a higher rate of post-traumatic stress disorder than men who have been trauma exposed. We want to try to understand why that might be.
We treat so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well.
Our forefathers weren't the pilgrims. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock was landed on us.
You're listening to True Information with Marquis Davis and Grown As Man. Hey everyone, and welcome to a brand new edition of True Information. I am your host, Marquis Davis.
And I am Grown Man. Please be informed that your mother needs to know exactly who I am.
Does she really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. In fact, I'm talking with to the rest of the group because you already told your mom who I am and she said hi. I mean, that's what's up. That's what I'm looking for here. Okay.
That's how my mother is. So, you know, whatever.
I'm just saying.
So today here on DVRadio.net, WDVR and True Information, we are continuing our PTSD series and we have a special guest today for you. Grown Man, introduce our special guest.
Well, I'll do it if you actually have to tell me like that. Gosh, but nah, look, everyone, I'm really excited because this young lady, she was featured on one of the Barracks Talk shows. I had a great opportunity just to speak with her, understand what her message is about. Her name is Teresa Crossman, and she's on the line with us right now, which is so freaking awesome. I'm excited. But how was that for intro, Marquis? I mean,
that was great.
Is that what you were looking for?
Yeah, I was looking for something like that. Could have been a little bit more exciting, though, but you know, whatever.
I smiled when I said it.
Ah, we can't see that through the radio. But yeah, hey, Miss Teresa, how you doing?
Hey,
Miss Crossman, how are you?
Yep. Good morning. How y'all doing?
Well, I'm here.
We're here. We're here and we're happy. We're excited to be here. We are very happy to be here. Yes.
All right.
What was that?
I just want to say thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be on your show today. Thank you.
Good. Okay. So
thank you for gracing us with your presence. Yes.
The first thing I want to do is allow you the time to introduce yourself to our listeners. So you now have the floor.
All right. Well, I'm Teresa Crossman, and I'm a United States Army veteran. And I am a military sexual trauma activist, mentor, coach, and a coach.
Okay.
So I do a lot of volunteer. I help MST survivors, get their health care, their veterans claims. And that's a no charge.
What?
Yeah.
I like free stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in case anybody's listening that is filing for VA claims or has or will, you need to know that it's illegal to be charged for filing your claims. As far as if somebody assists you for it, it's illegal for them to charge.
Oh, wow. I never knew that.
Yeah. So that's why I don't charge. I like to honor the law and honor our veterans and just advocate for them. And what this does is I use this as my therapy to help me with my military sexual trauma. And I've been doing this since 1994.
Wow. Well, kudos to you.
Wow.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, that is amazing. I thought it like we're not supposed to have to pay, which is a beautiful thing. Okay. Yeah, you just informed me about some more stuff. Every time I talk to you, I learn something new. Every time I talk to you.
All right, thanks.
So what kind of programs do you offer to, let's say, veterans who are going through PTSD-type syndromes or symptoms?
Well, you know, I do, like I said, I do specialize in MST, but I also definitely will work with PTSD survivors. Mm-hmm. And obviously, because back when I filed my claims in 96, after 4 years of even asking or trying to file, they kept telling me that my gosh, you're a female and you didn't actually go into combat, you certainly couldn't have any type of PTSD. And so anyway, but I went ahead and filed, and as a paralegal, I knew how to do this thing, no matter how many obstacles they threw at me, which they like to do. But anyway, that's where I'm at. Lost my train of thought, guys.
No, it's okay. It's okay. We do it all the time.
Don't worry. We do that all the time. Oh, we just good. We just go off on tangents anyway. I mean, Marquise is famous for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is, like, you, in what you just mentioned, you attempted to
file PTSD claims.
File a claim. Huh?
She attempted to file a PTSD claim, but they gave her a lot of hurdles.
They gave her a lot of hurdles, but and the reasoning is you didn't see combat. And you know, our listeners may or may not be familiar, but I'm just going to go through the list really quickly. Situations, and this is from the Health for Numerous. I can't pronounce that name, but anyway, it's one of the listings that actually lists what can cause PTSD. So, as it is now, violent attacks like rape, fire, physical or sexual abuse, acts of violence such as neighborhood shootings, school shootings, grocery store shootings, things of that nature, nightclub shootings, as we mentioned before, natural or man-made disasters, things like hurricanes or the 9/11, car crashes, military combat such as being shell-shocked that we talked about last episode of PTSD series. Witnessing another person going through these types of traumas, and being diagnosed with a life-threatening illness can also cause PTSD. Oddly enough, the pandemic can cause PTSD.
Absolutely.
So all of these things can, and what you're saying and what we're telling the audience is, at some point in time, the military did not believe that because it wasn't combat related, you were not able to actually claim PTSD, which is incorrect. So what were some of the ways that you learned to deal with PTSD?
Well, the first thing I had to learn, first of all, that I had it. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I really, seriously, my loved ones, I lost a marriage over it. They just thought I was completely crazy. And I was. What happened was, again, you know, they didn't want to recognize that women can have PTSD. And then you got to understand, I started seeking treatment back in 1980 when I was active duty. And, you know, on the down low, because, you know, when you're active duty, you don't want any kind of psych information in your records. So I went in and did this on the down low, and I was 8 months pregnant. And they said, well, we need to get into some deep diving talk therapy. And I'm like, no, this is not a good idea right now. So so when I first started my recovery, it wasn't actually really recovery. I was self-medicating with alcohol and marijuana and an occasional celebration with anything else I could find. And then, what happened was, is I just kept seeking, therapy. And again, you know, they just couldn't see that my trauma was from being in the military and then having my comrades sexually assault me and sexually harass me on a daily basis. And so when I got out of the military, again, that's when I went to seek help. And it just turned out that my therapist, it wasn't a good therapist. It wasn't a good fit. So then what I did was I continued to self-medicate. And of course, I lost a marriage out of that. Lost custody of my first child, who was born while I was in the military, and his nickname by my comrades was the Little Corporal. He had more rank than I did at the time, And it was kind of cute. It was a novelty, you know, 1981 he was born, and it was still brand new to have soldiers have babies and stay on active duty. So anyway, when I started, what happened was, is I lost the marriage, got remarried to a sailor, which is totally against Army regulation. Yes. That's a little joke.
I forgive you.
I get it. I mean,
I forgive you.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been trying to forgive myself for years. So it's just, you know, hey, you know, he was a good guy. So he actually joined the Navy after we got married. Ah. So anyways, we ended up, yeah. So, you know, so anyway, we know what, you know what? So we don't even want to go there. Okay.
No, nope. No, we're good. We're good. We're good. We're good.
We're not going to go there. Well, that's another show. So anyway, what happened was, is I ended up in San Diego. I left the Northeast at the time. I was in New Hampshire, and it just seemed like it was still what I call not very progressive in the psych area, you know, or especially sexual assault. So I came to San Diego, and, you know, of course, the you know, to me, I just spent, I felt like I was on vacation the first couple of years I was here, you know, being from the Northeast, you know, you come to beautiful San Diego and you feel like you're in paradise. So I did that for 2 years, got hired as a nutritionist for a while. And then my PTSD started rearing its ugly head. And next thing you know, the self-medicating that I was doing was not working anymore. So I ended up in rehab. And then when I got out, like I would have to say about 3 months later was when the PTSD got to the point where if you said the wrong thing to me, I would grab somebody by the throat and proceed to try to take them out.
Yep. And, yep.
Well, oh boy. My military training kicked in is what would happen. And it was either that, if I couldn't fight you that way, then I would cry like a little 5-year-old girl, mm-hmm. You know? It was either or. So I sought extra help because I was in the 12 step. So I sought outside help. And from there, I proceeded to use talk therapy and medications. And this started in 91. And in 92, I went to the VA to get help. They looked at me all cross-eyed and said, oh, we don't know what to do with you. Hmm. So, and finally, in 94 is when things started to hit the fan with military sexual assault. They didn't call it that back then, but they at the vet center here in San Diego, they started a kind of like a pilot therapy program for military sexual assault. And so we did that. And then that's when I started my activism, because through that I was asked to do interviews and radio shows. And then I started assisting others at that point through this. And I found that this was a good therapy for me. So that's really what I did. And diligently for about 23 years, you know, I worked on my own recovery while helping other veterans or other women or men with sexual assault issues. So any way I could. And basically just by using the buddy system that I learned in the Army, just having your back, mm-hmm. You know.
You know, one thing that really hit me hard when it comes to military sexual assault is that when I was deployed back in 2007, we had a female soldier. She wasn't in my unit, but she was on the FOB with us. And her senior NCO, her NCO kept sexually assaulting her. She went and she told about it, and no one believed her. They allowed him to smoke her in Iraq and all this other stuff. So she committed suicide in her chew in Iraq. It's just horrible. God. Horrible. So, you know, me hearing your story is just like, wow, you don't have to go to that extreme. You can make it through. You just have to seek help. You know, I went and told my experience on the last show. You have to seek help. Even though our military training tells us that we can fight through anything, we can do anything. No, you still have your battle buddies there. You still have your battle buddies there, right?
Yep.
So you have to utilize the system to get through some of this stuff with PTSD.
Absolutely.
And Teresa, I want to just say that is commendable and paving the way, because for 20 some odd years, you didn't let your voice be shrunk or reduced. You fought through a lot. Mm-hmm. You fought through a lot. That's a testament to not only your perseverance, but the ability for someone to make that happen. And anyone who's listening, you know, if you're struggling with some of this, please contact us. So we can, you know, get you the assistance. If Teresa wants to give her information for her her nonprofit on here, then that's great. Please do. But realize, like, this happened. She first tried to get this in 1980.
Yes.
1980, folks. And just so you know, I know that Marquis was not even born.
Nope, wasn't born.
He wasn't born in 1981. Or 82, 83, or 84. He is right there with that. So, like, just realize, like, the progression that the military as a whole has been making, dealing with sexual assault and PTSD, and the
stigma,
the help for both of them, huh?
The stigma.
Thank you. The stigma of both, the help for both is increasing. And the only way it can really, you know, really just take off and increase like it needs to is for people to come forward and say, yes, I have this. Yes, this happened to me. And yes, I still need assistance. So keeping it to yourself is actually not only a disservice to you, but it's a disservice to the people who fought with you. And it's a disservice to the people who might come after you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talk about my perseverance and things like that. Really, honestly, what drove me was my anger.
Mm.
Okay.
Anger gets stuff done.
It seems to work for me. I get a lot of shit done that way. I was freaking angry at the military for being so behind the times. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sorry, but I was so naive when I joined. I really thought it was going to be like Star Trek. You know? I really didn't. This was in 1980, and I thought it was going to be, you know, and I used to always joke around that I was born too early. I mean, that I should have been born later, because my ideas and way of looking at the world didn't match what was in the reality.
Right.
Of the world.
Right.
So, you know, I really went into the military or even into the workforce thinking that I wouldn't be judged for my gender, and that I wouldn't be sexually harassed or assaulted on a regular basis. When I did get out of the military and I went back into the workforce, you know, because of my military credentials and experiences, I was able to climb the ladder really fast in particular companies, to the point where I was 22 years old when I went back into the civilian lives. Okay, because then I was reserve at that time,
mm-hmm.
because I had gotten out on a hardship, because my first husband had threatened to take off with my newborn child. So it was a little, yeah.
Oh, that, there was that a family, lot of, that family, you know, care plan.
The power. Huh?
The family care plan.
Yeah, the family care plan, right? So anyway, So when I went back into the civilian world, into my career job, first of all, Ronald Reagan just signed a thing that veterans were not allowed to receive unemployment benefits.
Oh.
So.
Whoa. I got to look into that.
Wait, say that again? Sorry.
So President Reagan signed a bill back in, he was elected in 80. So somewhere in there he signed a bill. So by the time I got into the civilian workforce, I was not able to collect unemployment. Now I could go through there and get job, you know, look for job offers, mm-hmm. but I could not receive any money. So, you know, and I figured, okay, that's cool. I'm a soldier. I got this, you know, I got this, right? So I go and I joined this company. Now the company that I was working for, before I joined the Army. And so when I went back to the company, I climbed the ladder. And at this point, I'm 22, 23 years old, and I'm at the level of you know, what do you call,
manager,
pay scale or whatever.
Oh, okay.
As somebody twice my age. Mm. Okay. And back then, women cannot be making the same amount as men, or, you know, close to it. Obviously, I wasn't making as much as them because we always make a little less. But the thing is they were livid. They were livid that I was taking money out of their children's mouths. Mm. And this is what they tell me. And I says, excuse me, but I have a child too. I have a family I have to support too. You know, I have every right to do this. But so they tried all kinds of tactics there too. And again, I was sexually harassed because one of my bosses, because I would not sleep with this boss, he proceeded to work it out that I would be set up and fired. I was at that time mixing chemicals toxic chemicals for medical products that they use, mm-hmm. to build, you know, for catheters for the heart. So it was a pretty intense job, but they set it up so where I got fired. And at that point from that job, so all they did was demote me back to level one. I was a level 9 and they demoted me back to level 1.
Wow.
And that was the job I had before I joined the Army when I was 18.
Wow.
So I was pretty depressed about that. And before you know it, my PTSD really kicked in and I got so depressed where I was paralyzed. So long story short, I end up in San Diego. I had all these wonderful resources. The Vet Center was probably the most valuable resource for me. They were probably the first people that believed me. And then, so again, I just kept, you know, seeking talk therapy. You know, I was stayed off the street drugs. And then, of course, I proceeded to, because I was desperate and didn't have the knowledge, I was, you know, I was around 31 at this point, which, and then I would, so like I said, I was using the VA system. And of course, unfortunately, their psych staff, the ones that you do talk therapy, are only there for a year because they're new interns or residents. So, and our VA hospital in San Diego is connected to the UCSD medical part of their college. So anyway, so that wasn't beneficial. I honestly do not think that's beneficial, mm-hmm. when you get, all interns need to, you know, they all need to get their clinic hours. They need to learn their job and blah, blah, blah. But honestly, they just didn't have the life experience that I needed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They had the book. They had all the book. Right.
But they didn't have the experience.
No. So it was really difficult. And a lot of, every therapist I ever worked with, they could not handle my anger. You know, and, you know, they thought they took it on is what they did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just letting me express it. So these are the things that I learned along the way. And then I filed my claim. I won my claim first time around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, that was justice. To me, that was validation that the military recognized that, yes, this happened, you know, and this was the best way that they could compensate for me. So then after that, you know, I went ahead and, you know, finally got to do the things that I intended to do was, you know, buy a home, you know, have another child and all those things. So I proceeded to do all those things. And then, you know, and I got to do some wonderful things like, you know, because I became a more productive member of society.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I flipped houses, that's pretty much what I did to try to diversify my income. But at the same time, you know, I'm still working on myself. And you have to understand that with PTSD, they didn't even recognize that it was a physical thing too, mm-hmm. until the middle 90s. Okay. There was a big article on the cover of Time magazine was a picture of the brain where they took pictures of it with the inside with the MRI.
The MRI machine, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it lights up all the different areas. And this is where they were able to prove that PTSD is a physical issue.
You know what? Now, I'm so glad that you told your complete story. You know, it's not the entire story, but it's a complete story. Yeah. Because listeners of this show should understand that PTSD, though it affects a large portion of the veteran community and active soldier duty service members, it also translates and transfers to the civilian sector when you get out. You know, you got out and you were still dealing with sexual harassment and sexual assault issues. So that just compounded on top of your PTSD that was already there. And I'm an angry PTSD kind of guy myself, you know.
Yes, he is. Yes.
I can relate.
You know, and so it just shows that doesn't matter what race, creed, nationality, or gender you are, PTSD is going to affect you in some type of way when you have a traumatic experience. Like currently, I'm a part of the trauma PTSD core, I guess you want to call it, at the VA. That's what I go through, the trauma PTSD. Okay, I don't go through the regular PTSD therapist. I go through the trauma PTSD therapist. It's way more intense. You know, and so people have to get help.
No lollipops.
No lollipops. No candy. Nothing.
No candy.
Oh, terrible.
No candy.
Sounds like basic training to me.
Yeah. But man, Miss Teresa, you have so much to get out there, and I love it. I love it so much. You got something, grown man?
Go ahead. I'll unpack. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, no, I'm just saying, I love the fact that you are able to verbalize this for everyone. And that's the hard part for many of us soldiers to do, is verbalize it. That's the hard part for many of us that suffer through PTSD to do, is verbalize it. We'll get in our head and make up scenarios, and then we'll say, well, you know, I can deal with this. I dealt through that, so I can deal with this, you know. But you show that you have to get help. And once you get that help, you become a productive member of society.
And being a productive member of society is...
Instead of it, you know, and without help, what happens to us? We usually end up destroying ourselves and everyone around us.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us end up in prison or dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So, and if you look at the population, for example, in prison, as far as sexual assault goes, okay, or any kind of trauma, okay, you're going to find, in my opinion, that I would say 99% of the people in prison are there because they have unresolved issues related to trauma in some way.
Whew. There's a woman right now, and I cannot remember her name, and I've been looking at, trying to figure out who she is, but there's a woman who is on trial right now, incarcerated, because she killed the man who sold her into basically sex slavery.
Oh, I remember her. I think she got out. I think they pardoned her.
Mm-mm.
They didn't? Oh, wow.
No, not the little one. The it might have been another person, unfortunately. Like, honestly, it's happening now, and like, we're hearing about it. So the idea that, oh, which one do you mean? Like, yeah. That's horrible.
Yeah, that is horrible. But yep.
Our last picture I saw of her, she had on like a bulletproof, basically a bulletproof gown.
Mm.
And she was handcuffed in the front. And my thing is, like, PTSD is a horrible thing and can make you do some really rough things. But whatever the catalyst was for PTSD can be even worse. So, like, my heart goes out to her. And right now, I feel bad because I cannot remember her name. But I do know that she was on trial, or is on trial, because the man that made her become a sex slave, she killed him.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, so who did the worst thing here?
Right. Mm. Whatever happened to the insanity plea here?
Right. And that's not even temporary. That could be, because PTSD could push you to insanity.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, it is.
Oh, and believe me, there was a time when I was homicidal, suicidal. Well, for a while, I was just homicidal. And then I went into, well, if I'm going to take you down, I'm going to take me down too. And the only thing that really stopped me from doing this, well, first of all, I got all the weapons out of my house. And I had to put my knives in butcher blocks or in drawers or whatever, because you never know when you're triggered from a trauma. You don't know where that fine line is in your trigger so that you can stop it. And these are tools that you learn along the way, you know, in your recovery is how to manage those triggers so that you're not acting out in such a way where you're hurting others or yourself and ending up dead or in prison, you know? And so that was the first thing. That's what I had to do was, again, I lost my train of thought again.
I told you it happens here. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. There's this movement happening right now. Black Lives Matter, which is not a focal point in this show, but then from social media platforms and different friends that I hear about, there's also a portion of it that says women are not being protected like they should. They're not being looked after. When I don't mean in a what is it called,
chauvinistic type of way.
Chauvinistic type of way. I'm talking about, like, if you see a woman being beaten in the street by a dude, go stop the dude,
right?
And I know that growing up, even my mom kind of waved that off a little bit, because she's like, well, you don't know what situation that is, and you don't know if the woman's going to come back and say that you're in the wrong and now you assaulted somebody. And I think that one sentence, that one thought has been preyed upon so often. I don't want people in my business, and, you know, whatever victim's remorse, anything like that. But I know that PTSD is real. And here's my point. Sorry. I know that PTSD is real. I know that women being assaulted, whether it's sexually, emotionally, financial abuse, emotional abuse, whatever it is, it leaves a mark.
Mm-hmm.
And it leaves a mark so deep and so hard and so tough that it takes years to just even try to soothe. It takes years to try to soothe. And it happens with women. It happens with children. It happens to men. But honestly, men are one of the last demographics to ever talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while, and we're just now opening up as soldiers talking about PTSD. But look at World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War. And that's just wars that are very prominent. The Gulf War, War on Drugs. So many wars. I did throw that in there. But the second thing that we wanted to speak about, and I know that Marquis is going to keep me honest on time, is child PTSD. And that's also a very large, prominent thing. And
Mr. Reese, I don't want to try to interject you in this, but children suffer PTSD, and your oldest child may have suffered from PTSD during the time where you were going through your issues.
Absolutely.
Even when I go through my PTSD symptoms, sometimes my children are there, and I hate it. I hate it that they have to view me or see me like that. That's why I immediately went to get help, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And on the last show, we mentioned children and how the statistics are higher for children with PTSD because they don't know how to verbalize it. And Ms. Mm-hmm. Teresa, do you have any experience with children?
Well, I have as a daughter of a Vietnam veteran, you know, while he was active duty. So I watched the Vietnam War on television, looking for my dad all the time. And he has PTSD, and I he was very militant at home. I definitely, you know, I used to call it the monster when it would come out.
Wow.
You know, and it, yeah. And so, but you know, that they call that secondary PTSD. And yes, my son, who is a licensed marriage family therapist, he works with adolescents with PTSD, and of course other mental illnesses. But and through his own discovery, because part of being a therapist, they have to do their own deep diving. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's when he discovered that he had secondary PTSD. And I'm not surprised. And it breaks my heart that I exposed him. But I had no clue at the time.
Yeah.
I had no clue.
Yeah.
And believe me, I did everything in my power to get answers. Why is this happening to me? You know?
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of people out there, because think of the ratio of people who go to seek help. And like back in the 80s, when they said there's nothing wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those people had children. You are a product of that. Those people had children, and they said there's nothing wrong with you, but there was something that wasn't completely whole. Got you. And so I was like, okay. Now, those children having grown up, because I'm an 80s baby.
Mm-hmm.
Marquis is on the tail end of that with his young self. But like, our parents did a couple of numbers on us, and it wasn't their fault. So anyone listening, just realize, like, you could be a veteran, you could be someone who survived some childhood traumas or anything like that. Like, you could be unadmittedly or unknowingly harming in some type of way, shape, or form your child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so like, how about this? What are the signs and symptoms of some of the PTSD? We have, I'm looking at the list that I was talking to before, and this is actually for children. This is specifically for children. So I want to read these off really quickly. I'm not going to harp on too many of them, but intrusive thoughts or memories of the event. That can be adults or children. But remember, children don't verbalize it the same way an adult will. So unwanted memories of the event that keep coming back, upsetting dreams and or nightmares, acting or feeling as though the event is happening again, aka flashbacks, headache and fear when reminded of the event, feeling jumpy or startled or nervous when something triggers memories of the event, or children may reenact what happens in their play or drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which is why some of the therapists say draw out how you feel. What do you feel? Because you know, they draw, and pretty soon they're going to tap on whatever happened to them. So you have avoidance of any reminders of the event, avoiding thinking about or talking about the trauma, avoiding activities, places, or people that are reminders of the event, like if a child almost drowns and then doesn't want to go to the pool or be near a bottle of water ever again. Let's see, being unable to remember important parts about what happened because they block it out. Children are very resilient, so if they just block it out, then their body's really trying to help them. Help them not be afraid. Negative thinking or mood since the event happened, like lasting worries or beliefs about people and the world being unsafe, which is a big thing. Blaming oneself for the traumatic event, lack of interest in participating in regular activities, feeling anger, shame, fear, or guilt about what happened, feeling detached or estranged from people, and not able to have positive emotions such as happiness, satisfaction, or loving feelings.
See, the reason we give you guys this list, okay, is so that you can then go and say, hey, let me look at my kids. Let me just see what's going on with them, you know?
Or my niece.
Or my niece.
Or, you know, someone who might be grown by now that has exhibited this type of behavior for a while.
And one thing I really want to say is that because of the efforts of Miss Teresa back in the 80s and the 90s, we now have a forward-thinking psychiatric community who are developing and researching this. And it's because of your efforts, Miss Teresa. I mean, not you alone, but, you know, your efforts.
Right. And that was the other reason why I was so motivated on getting help, you know, for myself, because I knew, or I just felt like I wasn't the only one, and that the ripple effect of what I could do when I was well enough to help others, mm-hmm. you know, because I figured, you know, like you guys, the more information we have or the more knowledge we have, the better we are.
Well, Miss Teresa, right now I'm going to give you the chance to plug whatever you want to plug pertaining to you.
Plug it!
Pertaining to me, let's plug away. Well, yes, you can, if you need any help with VA claims, or you just need a buddy to get through the things, get through your trauma. Just what I do is I help guide you towards the best healthcare for you. I teach you how to find the best therapist, and I teach you how to get through your claims. And I just have a lot of different tips and ideas on how just to help you create your vision. As far as the claims and those things, that's nonprofit, so that's free to anyone. And you can go ahead and schedule an appointment with me at MST. Hold on a second. Well, you can also go to my website, empowermentbeyondtrauma.com, and opt in there to get to receive some information. But also, you can go ahead and I can't remember it offhand, and I don't have it right in front of me. I should have had it in front of me.
Just go to the website. I'm pretty sure it's there.
Yes. Please say the website again.
empowermentbeyondtrauma.com.
Okay, and we'll make sure that it's
in the description.
The description of this
podcast.
Yeah,
that'd be great. And then I'll go ahead and send you the scheduling link, so if they want some help in that area. And then I also do paid coaching, and that's a year-long program, and that's where you get daily interaction with me through texting and Boxer and that kind of thing, and even phone calls, you know. And so it's, the concept is I'm your buddy. Hmm. Okay. I'm going to have your back and get you through. I'm not a therapist. You know, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but I'm just a buddy that has learned all this through walking through the system myself. And I just want to share this with you.
That's amazing. I'm so glad you're here on the show. Oh, man.
Yeah, because we get tired of talking to each other.
Yeah, he gets kind of boring.
I'm not boring, sir.
I could talk with you guys all day long.
Well, we don't have that kind of time.
You too.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We appreciate you accepting the offer, to be honest with you. It's not very often that you find someone who is not only willing to talk about their experiences in a positive light, but also has better and forward thinking information that can help somebody else too.
And you're also our first guest, so
you are our first guest.
So just remember this, that there's a thing called narrative therapy. The mm-hmm. more you talk about it, the less power it has in your life. And so again, this is my therapy. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. We'll send you the bill later.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And with that, I am Marquis Davis.
And I am grown man. No need to tell, because she already knows now.
And this has been True Information. Until next time, good night.